someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
As a respected scholar and a journalist, he has lectured about global racism in 70 countries and in dozens of universities in the United States. He has published more than 100 articles, authored 8 books, and contributed to 19 others. For over 35 years, he has not only written about but been active in national and international human rights, electoral politics, and other social matters of the day, pushing politicians, educators, and the general public to see tough issues in new ways. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Howard University professor and chair of political science, Dr. Clarence Lussain. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you were born in Detroit, Michigan.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, fortunately, I was born in the early 1950s, so it means that I matured in the 1960s, and it was an incubator for social consciousness. And this is the 50th year anniversary of the Detroit Rebellion, and that was a pivotal and catalytic moment in my life, as it was for everybody in the city at the time. On the second night of that rebellion, both my mother and my sister were shot. So as you can imagine, it was traumatizing. Mm. But in the aftermath, there was a very concerted effort to pull young people like myself, I was about 12 or 13 at the time, into community activism and social engagement. So coming out of that, I began to be much more active around things that were going on in the community and begin to think about how do you bring about a world where people really are included, where you address the kinds of concerns that can be addressed by government as well as by communities. And fortunately, again, it was a period where, and in Detroit, there were stellar and experienced activists from across the political spectrum that I was fortunately young enough to be able to take advantage of.
You know, that's fascinating because I attended a screening of the movie Detroit. Our Howard alum Laz Alonso is in the movie. And, you know, I often, when I see those types of movies that have a little bit of a biopic, a little bit of current, of real-time events that they're trying to put in a current context, I often wonder how well it's depicted. And you having lived through it, it's probably very amazing to see a movie like that and to see probably yourself or your mom or your sister in the context of an event that obviously, as you said, was traumatizing on one end, but on the other end pulled you towards a community activism role.
Yeah, I saw the movie actually with friends from Detroit, and we all thought that it captured the intensity and passion of that time. What was missing from the movie, and every movie can't cover everything, is a context that showed the ways in which the Black community was responding more than just kind of rioting in the streets, that there was an ongoing kind of community and political activism. And then what happened after the rebellion, where within the next 7 or 8 years, the city elected its first Black mayor, Coleman Young, and began to address some of those issues that gave rise to the rebellion in the first place. Of course, subsequent to that event and to Coleman Young becoming mayor, the city began to go through changes, deindustrialization, white flight from the city. So then the city went into a crisis in the 80s and 90s, and now is still trying to come out of that.
Now, you attended Wayne State, where you did a BA in communications before coming to Howard, where you got your master's in political science and then subsequently your PhD, with a dissertation title of The Interaction and Collaboration Between Black Interest Groups and Black Congress Members in the 103rd Congress, A Study in Race-Conscious Policy Intervention. policy is dictated by clarity of purpose. Just last night I heard an ambassador say that. Tell me about the clarity of purpose that you found in your dissertation.
Well, let me give a little bit of context in how I actually ended up at Howard. From junior high through high school, Howard was always kind of a beacon for many of us in Detroit. There was Wayne State and Michigan State and University of Michigan. There were schools within the state. But for many of us, we were watching from afar what was going on with Howard. So I didn't go to Howard as an undergrad, but a very good friend of mine had come to Howard. She had come in 1975 or so because she was interested in the film program. And a brand new professor had come, Professor Haile Gerima, and he was trying some innovative things. And so she begged me and begged me to come to D.C. when I graduated. So literally the day after my graduation ceremony, I packed up my car and drove to Washington and spent the next couple of years not attending Howard, but working with Haile Gerima and his wife, who the woman who became his wife, Shrikiana. They were working on films and films of a social conscience. Mm-hmm. And so that continued my activism, as well as my drive for trying to see the relationship between community-based activism and public policy. And so I thought about it and thought about it, and then I had an opportunity to work on Capitol Hill for Representative or Delegate Walter Fauntleroy when he was representing Washington, D.C. And so I was very much engaged in a practical day-to-day basis on public policy making at the congressional level. But what I had not understood and decided this would be the focus of my research is how do you make that bridge between the concerns of the African-American community on drug policy, on immigration, on health care, and translating that into moving members of Congress into proposing legislation. And so what I began to do research on, and I was literally living in Congress at the time, was to start interviewing and talking to African-American members, but also white members of Congress about the process of lobbying and policymaking. So my dissertation focused on looking at that process.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Clarence Lussain, professor and chair of the Department of Political Science here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Based on your research then and looking at the context of today with the president in the White House trying to engage the Congress to move policy along, what things you saw in your research that you think are either obstacles or opportunities?
There has to be a base outside of the policymakers that's engaged. There has to be a mobilized, organized, and activist community that supports the kind of policies that we think will make these kinds of changes. What the black members of Congress in the period I was looking at back in the mid to 1970s, many of the black members of Congress had come out of these community activist organizations. So they had very strong ties. And when they needed to have letters written, when they needed to have visits to members of Congress, they could make that happen. Now, it was real critical also whether you were in the majority or in the minority. So if you're in the minority, even if you have that kind of activism, it's still very difficult to move policy. But it's impossible if you don't have that kind of activism. So, you know, the lesson I think for today is that for members of Congress who want legislation to move, they have to demonstrate and they have to mobilize their constituents to be also part of that process. It can't just be, let me write a bill, get members of Congress to sign off on it, but it really has to be a mobilized kind of effort.
So with that in mind, you talk about activism, and sometimes I think that activism is romanticized because it's activism for activism. You're talking about activism to try to move a purpose forward that then results in a policy that fulfills that purpose. Tell me what your view is about current day activism and what your advice is to our youth around that activism.
Now, this is a very important point because I would say, certainly when I was a young activist, the idea that public policy should be at the end of that was not necessarily there. You know, there were issues that were important to us to address, whether it was police brutality, that has historically always been a case, whether it was around drugs. You know, it was critical to raise the issues, to do education about the issues, but I did not always make that link that somebody has to make public policy and that there is a role for government in all of this. And so I would say that to the young activists today, it's very important that you are protesting and demonstrating and Facebooking and using social media, but you have to have an end game. And that means you have to try to figure out what is the public policy outcome that you want to achieve, and then what would be the process, the link between your raising your voice and getting someone who's in a position to make this policy happen to do that. And so that's been a lot of what we try to do in the Department of Political Science with our students, is to give them some basic and foundational understanding of the field of political science. What does it mean for national governments, state governments? How is Congress organized? How is the Supreme Court function, international relations? But ultimately, you have to see the relationship between the basis of political science and the reality of politics. And the reality of politics is you need public policy in order to make change.
Now, you also have a very global perspective. You spent a year as a visiting professor in South Korea.
Well, I was very a big reader when I was a child. My parents, you know, we didn't have a lot, so physically traveling was not going to really happen. But I traveled in my mind, and I read everything I could, including books about the rest of the world. So I always was eager. And then, unfortunately, I really had a lot of opportunities to travel. When I was at American University in the School of International Service, but I spent time in South Korea teaching at one of the universities there, and it was great. Not only being at the university, but being in Seoul, getting to know the city, and then traveling around a bit. And so I really, really want to encourage students to get on the road. You know, you have, when you're young, you don't have many obligations. Take the time. It is well worth it to make that journey. I try to do this with my own son. My son is 8, and I take him with me everywhere I can. He did his kindergarten in Japan. We spent a half a year in Kyoto, and I took him, put him in a school, a local school. He was the only non-Japanese kid in the school, and he loved it.
Few Americans have traveled to North Korea, and obviously you have. Mm-hmm. What, looking at current events and where we are in terms of, you know, rising tensions, what is your perspective based on your visit to North Korea, the country you saw then, and what's taking place today?
Well, North Korea is an outlier country, no doubt about it. It is isolated. It has self-isolated itself. The leadership of the country basically has created a totalitarian situation, and it's been like that for 3-4 generations of leaders. And it often engages in the world in extremist and provocative ways. However, I think it's really critical, and I would say most foreign policy experts and diplomats think so as well, that it is a rational player. And it should be seen and dealt with in ways that don't adhere to its provocations, but understand its rationality for what it does. Because that becomes the best means by which the issues between North Korea and the rest of the world can be addressed in the least aggressive and certainly least militarist kinds of ways. And so it's really critical, the language that's used in addressing how to deal with North Korea, the images and the symbols that are used in addressing North Korea, because the situation could escalate very rapidly, and it's difficult to pull back on some of the steps that could be taken that could really cause many lives.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Clarence Lussain, professor and chair of the Department of Political Science here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.